This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
And it's because of Cheltenham, thanks to Cheltenham, that Simon Mayo and Mark Kermode are here with their weekly film review. Hello, both of you.
Good morning, Victoria.
Thank you for allowing us to invade your studio.
No, it's the pleasure is all mine. Now what happens?
Don't know, really. What happens down there?
Well, don't you tell the listening public about the fantastic act of charity running that we did.
Oh, right, OK, well...
Shall I just mention the films that you're going to talk about?
Fine. No, yeah, you go ahead.
Or do you want to do that?
No.
OK.
Take it away.
10,000 BC.
Which is every bit as good as the title suggests.
OK. Mr. Lonely.
Which is every bit as good as the fact that it's directed by Harmony Korine suggests.
Redacted.
Which you've seen.
Yes.
Right, which we shall probably have a row about.
Which is... How do you know? We've never even met before.
He makes these suppositions always.
Yeah, that's fine. So, anyway, Redacted, the Brian De Palma film, very controversial, caused a big stink in America.
Yes, and The Cottage?
Yes. That's probably as far as we'll get, to be honest.
Okay, fair enough.
Now, so this is all a bit strange for a whole number of reasons. Part of the fact that we're on your programme. Mm. Part of that because of Cheltenham.
Yeah.
But also because of Sport Relief. And we found ourselves being talked into by Steve Redgrave. Mind you, if you're going to be talked into anything, it might as well be by Sir Stephen Redgrave.
Yeah, and he did it very sort of smoothly in a way that we didn't even realise that we'd agreed.
Yes, but not just agreeing to run 1 mile, but we agreed to run 3 miles. And then it sort of it became this thing, so it's not just that, but we need to do movie reviews while we're doing it at the same time.
Mm. I was holding out for 7 miles.
That wasn't an offer, it was 6.
No, I just want you
he
to know
he as in Mr. Mayo.
Mr. Mayo,
yes.
Took the number of miles down. I was going for 7.
I was
and the
very
point
wise.
You're making is...
That I'm fitter and more strapping than he is.
I'd like to remind you both that actually a listener has just seen Adrian Charles and Alan Shearer on the A45 cycling 300 miles.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but they cheat, they practice, they train, you
right,
see.
Okay.
Once you're in training, it really doesn't count.
And they're on a bike.
Yeah. And, you know,
and it's downhill.
Exactly. Anyone can do that. The essence of this is the untrained running.
So explain the setup.
Well, it
a
was.
Bit.
We wanted to get a movie reference into it, and so we thought, let's do Chariots of Fire, because obviously that's the thing that people think when you think of running. So we went to the place, but it's not the right place. It's the place where they filmed that sequence, but it's not actually where it's meant to be. Because we were in Eton.
It should be Cambridge.
I think we explain everything as we're running down.
Okay.
This is good. Okay.
And then when the deal was that we would do the film reviews as we were doing the run to prove that it was possible for two very unfit old men to, you know,
stagger
to do
around
it whilst on the go. And I'd also like to point out that obviously it's harder when you're speaking, and I'd like you to take note of who does the most speaking and therefore who had the harder time. Yes. Of
being this will be a real surprise for everyone. Guess who does the most speaking as we run around. So we've got the box office top 10 coming up first of all, which we'll do now. Victor, is that okay? It's just your show, so.
Yeah.
Do you want to point out
let me think about this for a moment. Yes, that's fine.
But people can see it as well. There is proof. You can watch it on the...
It's going to be online. Whether it's up at this second, I don't know. But any moment now, all of this is going to be up on the website.
So you can see that we're not faking it. We're not just standing in the studio going...
Okay, you know. So this is Tuesday afternoon. Mark and I at Eton, and they're off.
Remind me why we're doing this?
I think it's something to do with this is the place where they filmed that bit from Chariots of Fire where the very fit actors run round the... It's meant to be somewhere else. We're in Eton. Eton Rifles. But it's
so
meant
this
to
is
be...
Eton where they filmed Chariots of Fire.
Yes.
The bit where it's supposed to be Trinity College.
Yes.
But Trinity College wouldn't let them in.
Ah.
So they came to Eton.
Dun, dun,
and I'm,
dun,
I'm
dun,
Nigel dun, Havers.
Who does that make me?
Bing Cross.
Oh, fine. Okay.
Fortune 100.
But Nigel Havers is the better looking one. That's not... that. I think that's not actually right.
Correct.
Can I be Anthony Andrews? Or is that Brideshead Revisited?
He's not in it.
Okay, fine. Well, I'll be him anyway. So
we're here. So the whole point is that we run.
Yes.
We do this thing for
the sport relief.
And
you're getting breathless already. We're not even around once.
No,
yes, you are.
No,
come on, pick it up.
Right, before we get any further, why are you wearing a suit and sandals?
Because I said, firstly, the whole problem with this sport thing is people say, oh, well, you know, let's get into training. Training, let's wear all the right gear. That's rubbish. The essence of sport... Or particularly a run like this is, if you were being chased by a woolly mammoth or something, you wouldn't say, I'm not in training, I haven't got the right gear on. So, I only ever wear this suit, and these sandals saw me through a 7 mile quarter marathon, so I figured I did that without training.
We've gone all the way around once.
Once, fine.
I haven't mentioned a stupid film yet.
No, that's okay. So, should we do the top 10 going round the course? How are you bearing up?
This is box office top 10.
Okay.
Fine.
Number 10, There Will Be Blood, which is still the best film on release.
Well, is that There Will Be Blood?
There Will Be Blood. And in fact, in this case, there might be more than that. There might be resuscitation
vomit.
Involved. No, it's absolutely wonderful. Paul Thomas Anderson redefines the language of modern cinema. Obviously, the best way to see it is on your own, with Camden catching fire as you come out. There's the bell to demonstrate that we're actually doing this
at Eton College
at 3:15 on a Tuesday afternoon and not live.
I had a pasty on the train coming down. Was that wise?
Did it have sweet corn in it?
Yes.
That's good. So in that case, you're fully prepared to be vomit, to vomit.
All over.
Okay.
The bike.
There was never anyone on the bike. They had to negotiate the phone. I'll go around this way.
Okay, I'll go to the right.
Please.
A semi-pro at 9.
It's an obstacle course. Semi-pro, well, it's yet another, you know, Will Ferrell does exactly the same thing he always did before. It's a sporting movie, so it kind of ties in with what we're doing. That's the end of the second lap in Steady. Will Ferrell is a semi-pro basketball star, and it's not funny. It's just he gets to put on the funny wig, he does the flared trousers, there's lots of shots taken looking up his sports shorts.
Juno at 8.
I really love it. Big fan of Juno. Love Ellen Page. Really pleased that Diablo Cody won the Oscar for Best Screenplay. Everybody should go and see it.
We're
and
on lap 3, by the way.
Are we? How many laps to a mile?
I don't know.
How are you feeling?
Fine.
Should we give it a burst?
Be kind. No, very unwise.
Okay.
Be kind. Rewind at 7.
Michel Gondry light, basically. I mean, the thing with Michel Gondry is...
What does that mean?
It means he loves cinema. He loves the mechanics of cinema. So when he makes films, they're all about the making of other films. Now, sometimes that can be sort of slightly impenetrable if you're not a film bore like what I am.
Chapel's closed, look.
Oh dear, but
can't
that was
chapel.
Go into the chapel and we're
get on with it.
Gonna be resuscitated. Anyway, in the case of Be Kind, Rewind, story is Jack Black and Mozdev work in a video store. All the videos get blanked, so they have to reenact all the movies like Ghostbusters. And it's kind of charming and sweet and cute. And it's all about how you can do this stuff better in your house than you can with multi-million dollar Hollywood budgets. I can see it's not great, but it's good fun.
Jumpers at 6.
Well.
Lap 4 coming up.
This would be the point when if we were Hayden Christensen and that other bloke, Jamie Bell, we wouldn't be running around this track. We would be jaunting like they did in the Tomorrow People style, in which you suddenly imagine the place which you want to be, which in this case is down that end of the track, and you just mysteriously materialise there. Sadly, we haven't got that power, so we are just two old blokes running around a track,
I've got trainers on, and you've got flip-flops.
Yeah, but these are very, very good flip-flops. Can I say, I think I'm bearing up just as well as you in my suit and flip-flops.
Jumpers at 6.
Yeah, we just did that.
Have we?
I'll do it again. You want to go back? I mean, it's like we missed out a whole lap. What was the next one?
Sorry, I tuned out. I was reading the boards here,
yes,
telling me what's going on. Accidental husband at 5.
Which is just not funny at all. Irma Theakston, bad actress, can't deliver a line, has no comic timing. That's why she works so well in Quentin Tarantino movies, because Quentin Tarantino writes dialogue like nobody actually speaks. You go, okay, fine, give her a lead in Kill Bill, because she just speaks like a Quentin Tarantino character.
Anyone can understand anything that you're saying now?
Do I not sound coherent?
Not really.
I think I sound splendidly coherent.
Okay, go on, then.
Anyway, all you need to understand is Irma Theakston, very, very bad actress. Colin Firth looks terribly embarrassed. Whole film is about a radio DJ, and her version of a radio DJ is less convincing than the version that you're doing now whilst running around a track.
4, it says the bath job, but I imagine that must be the bank job.
The bank job, yes.
It's the bath job.
It's Jason Statham, isn't it? Yeah, Jason Statham. God blimey, we've got to do this thing, you know, I've got to break into this bank, and when we get in there, well, there's a bunch of reddies, but you know what? There's also all these compromising pictures of the royal family. Blimey.
Game
people
planet
from
number 3.
I haven't finished with Jason Statham.
I know, that's the whole point. Game planet 3.
Okay, no, I didn't see game plan. Because last week I was in America, I went to Philadelphia, and to get into training for this, obviously I ran up and down the rocky steps, so I missed Dwayne The Rock Johnson's marvellous new movie Game Plan. So if anyone's seen it, please email us in and tell us whether it is indeed fun for all the family, or whether you met The Rock, didn't you?
Yeah, a long time ago.
You thought he was nice. Did you nearly fall over there?
Almost.
Okay.
It's the uneven cobbles. There goes another plane.
The uneven cobbles at 2. I don't think I saw that either.
I think it's lap 6. You know when they were filming this, by the way?
No.
In the crowd, Kenneth Branagh.
Kenneth Branagh?
Stephen Fry and
no.
Glory.
Really?
Just doing a bit of rah.
But were they extras, or they were there sort of
extras.
Looking for main roles?
Extras.
Wow. I was with Kenneth Branagh in Gosainen recently for the world premiere of Alien Love Triangle. What a fabulous stand-up guy he is.
I thought this top 10 rundown might be the shortest we've ever done.
No.
Actually, here comes lap 7. Hyperbolic girl at number two.
Yeah, you see, it's a problem. I mean, on the one hand, the story of Henry VIII and, you know, his relationship with the Boleyn girl sounds like it might be really, really interesting. And there is a sort of polemic.
Are you sweating it, by the way?
No, I'm doing all right, but I mean, no more so than normal. You see, I'm rather like that line in...
Speed up a bit.
Yeah, sure. The Poseidon Adventure. You know, when Shelley Winters, she says, in the water, I'm thin. Well, me, on flip-flops, I'm thin. Which film was I talking about?
Number one. Oh, there's some people in the way here.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
The number one movie.
Can't stop.
We're just getting past the Eton School notice board.
What was the number two that I was doing that I hadn't finished?
Oh, it's Vantage Point. Oh, never mind that.
Okay, Vantage Point, right?
Vantage Point is the UK's number one.
Which is basically sort of Hollywood's answer to Rashomon, which, as we established last week, Rashomon is a Japanese film in which you see the same event from several different points of view. In this case, it's the assassination or attempted assassination of the American president as seen through several points of view. It starts off quite interesting. By the time you get to the fourth version of seeing those same events, you're starting to feel like it's Groundhog Day. And then they lose faith in the central idea. They start just blowing up cars and chasing things around. Should we go around once fast? Just to make the point.
Do you know?
Yes.
Why we're better than Ben Cross playing at Harold Abraham?
No.
And Nigel Havers?
Well, more handsome.
Lord Linley.
More handsome and funnier.
All that.
Yeah.
So they didn't have to do this challenge while talking.
Yeah, the talking thing is
boring.
Difficult.
They just ran and kept silent.
I know. Well, nor indeed doing a coherent rundown of the UK's box office top 10. Should we sprint to the end for the...
I'll
race you.
I'll race you.
I'll race you. Right.
I'm Nigel Havers. Make way.
Who won?
Now, the funniest bit about that is you can hear the flip-flops over the cobbles.
Flip-flop.
At the very last moment, sort of pretending that he wasn't competitive, he cut a corner. He cut a corner, and that was it. And in that last
Mayo cheats.
You claim I cut a corner. I thought I won fair and square.
One listener has noticed that by you two agreeing to do this run together, it really is just an excuse for you two to spend more time with each other.
Don't think that works.
Unfortunately, it wasn't quality time.
Here's an interesting statistic, though, Victoria. Okay, we were told that four times around the quad Eden is a mile.
It is.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that little top 10 rundown we did in 8 laps.
Yeah, okay. 8 minutes.
Well, exactly. The timing of that tape was about 8.5 minutes, which means that if our statistics are true, we've just done 2 4-minute miles, pretty much.
That's good going, isn't
it? Well, it is.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah. It is, and I'm sticking by those statistics of 4 laps is a mile, and we just did 2 4-minute miles.
We are almost Olympic standard.
We are, but I've always said that.
What other films are we going to talk about?
We're going to do 10,000...
BC.
I was going to say 10,000 maniacs. 10,000 BC. Nat Dormer on an email, first of all, says, I wouldn't dream of undermining the good doctor, but having played Anne Boleyn in The Tudors for the last 2 years, I know Mark doesn't watch TV, don't worry, I'm over it, I felt compelled to clarify a few remarks from last week's programme.
Clarify, I love that word, clarify.
The accusations that condemned Anne Boleyn were adultery, incest and conspiracy to murder the king. Henry's tendency towards self-delusion and self-pity had him allegedly grumbling at having been duped by witchcraft, but it was not a formal charge. Anne's enemies called her a witch, and tales of deformity are all part of the character assassination to associate witchcraft with the Protestant religion. There is no strong evidence...
To associate witchcraft with...
There is no strong evidence that she was a polydactyl, but rather a sympathetic biographer said that she'd some little show of extra nail on the side of one of her other fingers, and that's about it. Don't mean to bore you with a history lesson, but I know Kermode's need for authority is absolute. Could you say hello to me along with Morrissey and Isaacs today?
Yes, hello to David Morrissey, hello to Jason Isaacs, and hello to
Nat Dormer, who signs it the other Anne Boleyn girl.
Well, that's fantastic. Thank you for clearing that up, because certainly the issue of Anne Boleyn's 6 fingers, which, I mean, if you go to Wikipedia, there's page after page on how many fingers Anne Boleyn actually had and whether or not she was charged with witchcraft. I feel that has been finally fully put to rest, so thank you very much. So should we do 10,000 BC?
Are there any movies out this week?
There are. So 10,000 BC, which is the new movie by Roland Emmerich, who's the guy who made Stargate and The Day After Tomorrow and Independence Day. So the thing he does is big, right? He does big. He doesn't necessarily do sensible, but he does big. And occasionally it's good fun. I mean, I like Independence Day. I like the bit when they, you know, blow up the White House, and the bit when Jeff Goldblum gets out of the spacecraft and walks in that way that only Jeff Goldblum can. So the plot here is basically, well, the plot is the title. It is 10,000 BC. And we start with a tribe of people who all of whom speak the international Star Trek language, which is English, but in a slightly funny accent with the occasional word ugh in between. This indicates that obviously this isn't the language that they would really be speaking in, but so that we can all understand it, that's what they're speaking in. And their main problem is how to decide how they choose their new leader, which is a competition which is decided by fighting woolly mammoths. Shall we hear a clip?
Good idea, sir.
Today, I will not pierce the heart of the Monarch. It will be one of you. One of you will claim the White Spear. May the fathers of the Agar and the spirit of the mighty Monarch choose the best of you.
Yeah!
Yeah! Then you have the first blow.
Now then, the Monarch is yours.
You will be our leader.
Billy, what about you?
I hunt to an Everlet.
And that's pretty much it in terms of the plot. And then what happens is, it starts out being a little bit like Teenage Caveman. They're all running around in their loincloths and they're having to fight woolly mammoths. And then it goes a little bit Apocalypto light because the village gets invaded by a bunch of people who steal everyone from the village and take them off to build pyramids for some sort of vaguely evil civilization. And then it looks like it's going to go a little bit Stargate because there's some stuff about astrology and cosmology and it all gets a little bit Eric von Daniken. And then there's a big sort of Antony and Cleopatra style sword and sandals, big battle with lots of marauding woolly mammoths, and then they invent agrarian farming, and then it sort of ends.
Why do they invent agrarian farming?
Because they have to have some kind of, you know, let's all come together of the tribes in here. If you take this grain, it shall make your land prosper and bear fruit. And then they do, and then everyone has a big hug at the end. And en route, there's a fight with a saber-toothed tiger who appears to have wandered off the set of the Golden Compass, presumably believing that the Golden Compass would be around in cinemas for longer than it actually turned out to be. He said, oh, well, never mind, it's 10,000 BC, I'm fine, I'll be in that. And they do a little bit of Daniel and... Who is it in the Lion's Den? Daniel in the Lion's Den. Mm. Daniel? Yeah. And they do a little bit of that. And then there's another...
Like my contribution to this film review.
Mm. And then there's...
But you were affirming
him,
which is the main role.
It's so much better than what he usually does.
Right.
And then there's another bit in which the entire village appear to be attacked by a tribe of giant emus, and that's particularly strange.
It's quite scary.
It must be an age thing, but I find it impossible to look at any bird that looks like an emu without wondering why Rod Hull isn't running along behind it. And it's 2 hours long, and it cost $75 million to make. And this
sounds like a shocker.
It's quite dull. I mean, I like Roland Emmerich. I like spectacular, you know, sort of, you know, adventure epics. That's all perfectly fine. But it is quite dull, and it's, you know, it just trundles along, reminding you of a lot of other films, and it isn't, and then it sort of stops. So rather a damp squib from Roland Emmerich, and certainly not on the same par as Independence Day, which I still think is really, really good fun and really exciting.
Is there any kind of Raquel Welsh moment?
No, there isn't, but there is the central character, the central female character, who appears to have been dressed entirely by Monsoon and wearing the kind of, you know, jewellery that you can buy on Waterloo Station. Is it called Accessorize?
Yes.
You know,
yes.
That, fine, thank you. And so, and also, they've all
Chips
got...
Was that a question to the ladies?
Yes. Well, it's not asking him, you know, although
I've been into Accessorize.
Have you?
Yeah. Really?
Ask the girls about jewellery, ask the men about movies.
About movies, no, I'm sorry, that was terribly patronising of me, so I'll ask Simon. Simon, have you ever been into Accessorize?
I have a 14-year-old daughter, of course.
I will
find it.
There we go. And the other thing, and this is to the whole table, this is a non-sexist across-the-board thing, they all appear to have perfect teeth, which is interesting because it's 10,000 BC, you know, they haven't invented electricity, but they've got fantastic dental care. So they all smile with their pearly whites all the time. So it's a bit boring, and it's not terrible, but it's a bit boring.
Is it better than Ice Age?
Yeah, but that's because it does at least have the beginning of a narrative. There's a bit, and then there's a kidnapping, and then there's a chase, and then there's a bit, and then there's an end, as opposed to Ice Age, which was just bit, with a short bit at the beginning.
Was it a bit bitty?
It was a bit bitty, yes, it was.
Is there anything else?
Yeah, but in my headphones said we have a call that we have to take.
No, no, we don't have to. I very much want to talk to Jonathan, and I hope you will. He wants to talk about the Boleyn girl.
Yes.
Hello. Hi, Jonathan.
Hello.
Go on, go for it.
I enjoyed the film. I thought it was a good piece of drama, but my main criticism is in relation to the certificate of 12A.
Oh, yes.
In relation to the fact that they had incest, rape, beheading, and this is a film that I could take my 7-year-old daughter, who's studying Henry VIII at the moment at primary school, and I thought the certificate of 12A was so dreadfully inappropriate.
Well, listen, can I leap in here and say that this is very interesting. This is a subject that was very close to my heart. I also have a daughter who's studying Henry VIII and asked me, can I go and see The Other Boleyn Girl? And I said, well, I'll have to see it first, because I'd seen the trailer, and the trailer just makes it look like a very chocolate boxy kind of borderline bodice ripper. It is absolutely true that the film is completely inappropriate for 7-year-olds. You are absolutely right. 12, I would say, is the bottom age of it, because quite rightly, as you point out, if you're dealing with Henry VIII, all those things are invoked. Now, of course, it's possible to teach that subject in school, but there is a clear problem here, which is that there are a number of school kids of an age that I would say, as I think you're saying, they clearly they shouldn't be going to see that movie. And if you're a parent and your kids are saying, take me to see The Other Boleyn Girl, it's, you know, there is there's a rape sequence in it. There's, I mean, the incest is only implied because it doesn't actually happen, but it's violent. I mean, and there's an awful lot of stuff about, you know, women being sold as commodities, and about you know, sexual relations in terms of power and money, which I think its tone is not that for anyone below the age of 12. And this is it is an ongoing problem with the 12A certificate. The BBFC, when they give something a 12A, what they mean is you need to be 12 to see this, unless under exceptional circumstances your parents or guardians think that there is a reason why you should go. The BBFC themselves say that the minimum age for a 12 certificate should be 8, and at one point they considered making that mandatory, but they said it was just too complicated to do it. But the BBFC recommendation is 12 means no one under the age of 8, and pretty much no one under the age of 12, unless you have particular reason for believing that your children will be okay with it. I completely agree with the caller. It's not a movie for people under the age of 12.
Do you want to come back, Jonathan?
Yes.
Do you want to say something else?
I agree with the good doctor there. The situation is, when I saw the rape scene, the rape scene is something that 5 years ago you wouldn't have had that in a situation that would have been under an 18. And I can't see that we've come that far in such a short space of time that rape is now for people who are under the age of 12.
Well, I thought seeing the movie, my immediate impression was that it was going to be a 15 certificate. I was slightly taken aback by the 12A. Having read the BBFC's justification, which incidentally, if you go to the British Board of Film Classification website, they explain all their classifications very clearly. There is also something now which is the PBBFC, the Parental British Board of Film Classification website, which gives really, really thorough breakdown of every decision they make. I think having read their decision, which I would invite everybody to do, I think they're right in terms of their own guidelines. But the point that they're making that seems to get overlooked too often is when we say 12, we mean 12.
Okay. Thanks, Jonathan.
Can I make one point?
Go on,
good,
quick.
Good doctor's right in most things, but in relation to Independent Day, it's rubbish.
It's
on all
not
levels.
Rubbish.
It's rubbish on all levels.
The only level on which Independence Day is rubbish is the level on which it is possible for an earthbound species to inject a computer virus into an alien spaceship that's come from another galaxy and yet somehow has software that can upload the virus. Now, that I will give you. The rest of it, I'm buying.
Jonathan, do you love when Will Smith kicks the alien and says, How's that for a close encounter? That's funny.
That was without doubt one of the worst bits of the movie history ever. And there is no doubt in the book that the good doctor needs to sit down in a darker room and think long and hard about what he says about Independence Day, because it's rubbish.
Thank you very much, Jonathan. Here's an email from Jay Metcalf. Victoria, shut up and listen to Kermode and Mayo. At least let us do so. Stop saying we. You know nothing about film and we don't care what you think. It's your show, but that's not nice. Your hour. Go away and make some tea.
On DAB Digital Radio, digital TV, downloads and online.
This is Five Live.
So what's next, gentlemen?
Can I read this email from Stuart and Bridger Allen, just to remind Mark, brackets, film guy, Jeff Goldblum's walk from the aircraft in the Independence Day was a complete rip-off of Sam Shepard's after he crashes his plane right near the end of The Right Stuff, because The Right Stuff is a fantastic movie which is in the last year or so been released in a wonderful double disc edition DVD with loads and loads of extras, and it's a terrific piece of work.
And a number of listeners pointing out Peter Smith in Prague, he's our listener in Prague in the Czech Republic, who couldn't believe we had an email from Nat Dormer, she was the woman who was correcting you about the six fingers Anne Boleyn, because she plays Anne Boleyn on the telly. He says, please keep Nat Dormer on the hello list simply for the fact that she's gorgeous.
Will you talk to Nikki about Independence Day?
Go ahead.
Hi, Nikki.
Hi.
Go on.
Hi. At the beginning of the film, Will Smith has just been turned down for his promotion.
Right.
And at the end of the film, they greet him with the same rank. So I just wondered what it takes to get promoted in America.
Yeah, I mean, I think the essential problem...
all that alien button, you're talking about promotion.
But the problem with that is, isn't it, it's like assuming that there is any form of logic in the detail of Independence Day. I do think that the only way that Independence Day works is if you leave your brain at the door as you go in and you just watch it as a stupid alien invasion movie. But, you know, I mean, I'm sure there's a million things like that that are complete. As I said, the most incredible of them being that the way they defeat the aliens is by uploading an Amstrad general generated virus that somehow they have to, I mean, I can't make my computer plug into my phone socket, and yet they can make their computers plug into a phone socket that comes from the other side of the world, so other side of the universe. So it's not big on detail.
No. Okay. Thank you,
Nikki. Thank you. What do you want to talk about next?
Redacted, because now you've seen, or at least some of Redacted, right?
Yes. Do I have to confess I didn't get to the end?
Well, it's...
Partially because I wanted to go to bed, because yes. It was late last night. Partially because it's so grim.
Yes, it is. Redacted is a new film by Brian De Palma. There's been a spate of movies about the Iraq War, which, interestingly enough, haven't done very well at the American box office. And, of course, when the Oscar nominations came out, In the Valley of Elah was the closest anything really got to recognition. The rest of them were sort of largely overlooked. Redacted is by far the most controversial and the most... forthright and outspoken in the movies. It's by Brian De Palma, who up until recently was sort of known as the triumph of style over content. I mean, he made things like Dress to Kill and Body Double and Untouchables and Raising Kane and most recently Black Dahlia. And these are all films in which everyone said, oh, they look fabulous. And what they mean was they look fabulous, but they're very sort of empty. And he would do a lot of things like he would quote Hitchcock shots and he would quote famous shots from other movies. So he's very, very stylish, but not massively substantial. Redacted describes itself as a fictional documentary inspired by, in inverted commas, true events. And the story is of an American troop out in Iraq who on one terrible night go out and commit a really appalling crime, which involves rape, murder, burning down of a house. And this story is then told through a sort of mashup of reconstructed documentary footage, online blogs, the soldiers' own two-camera monologues, news footage, all of which has been faked by Brian De Palma to look like it's a documentary.
And it's very believable, isn't it?
Well, it's... interesting. Did you find all of it convincing?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
I really did. I thought they were sort of angry young American troops who were bored out of their brains manning this checkpoint in near Baghdad, and so get drunk and let's go and rape somebody.
I think one of the most shocking moments in the film is there's a sequence in which there is a car which is driving through this checkpoint, and the soldiers attempt to stop the car by putting their hands up, and it's explained later that the gesture of putting your hands up doesn't mean the same thing in all cultures, and the car therefore doesn't stop, and somebody gets senselessly slaughtered. In America, there's been a real outcry about it, saying it's terrible, it's really, really unfair to the American troops. It's interesting, if you compare it to Nick Broomfield's movie, Battle for Haditha, which again is a sort of fake documentary. It's a retelling of another terrible event which happened during the same conflict, but which is much more sympathetic to the people on the ground. In Nick Broomfield's movie, which peculiarly for Nick Broomfield is a very balanced affair, in his movie, everyone on the ground, whether they be American troops or whether they be people who were just involved in the conflict, are all victims. And actually the finger that he points is at the people in control, the generals manning the battle from miles away, the terrorist leaders ordering these... insurgent acts. It's just the people on the ground get caught in the middle of it. In Brian De Palma's movie, he absolutely points things, as you say, the portrayal of these characters, they're drunk, they're bored, they're reading Hustler magazine, and when they've got a little moment to spare, they go off and commit the most appalling atrocities. Now, De Palma compares the movie to Casualties of War, which is a film he made about Vietnam, which I have to say is a real footnote in the great Vietnam War catalogue. You look at Apocalypse Now, and you look at Coming Home, and all those great movies, and then at the end of it, there's Casualties of War. Actually, this is much closer to the films that De Palma made very early on in his career, like Greetings and High Mom, which were these very edgy, politically satirical movies in which, when he was an angry young man. I think the most interesting thing about it is De Palma's now in his 60s. It looks like the work of a 25-year-old filmmaker. I mean, it looks like the work of some punky filmmaker who's just discovered high-definition video and is in tune with YouTube and all that kind of stuff. I think there are some... I mean, if you get through to the end of the film, there is, at the end of the movie, a montage, suddenly. At the beginning of the film, it says this is all fictional, although it's based on real events. At the end of the movie, there is a montage of real war atrocities, which I thought was a complete misstep, because I thought that just tipped the film over into sort of histrionic Mondo territory. It's like Africa Radio or Mondo Cannibale or even Cannibal Holocaust. It's a very cheap trick to resort to actually simply showing photographs of real war atrocities, because pretty much anyone can do that, and you really have to earn the right to do it.
What point is he making?
The point that he's making is, look, this stuff is really happening. There are really bad, but I think that that's a point that the film itself should make on its own terms. There are many, many things wrong with it, and there are times, it's interesting you say you're convinced by that, there are times that I think the documentary stuff works, there are times that it feels fake to me. But for all its flaws and for all the things that are wrong with it, I was excited to see De Palma making a film that was so angry, that was so grim, that was so, you know, like the yell of a young man rather than the snore of an old fart who's, you know, who's just resting on his laurels.
We're not going to hear a bit, are we?
No, because the reason we aren't, I'll explain
it's
this.
It's difficult to find
you
a bit.
You can't find a clip from Redacted that doesn't involve... I mean, honestly, all you'd hear is a succession of bleeps.
Yeah,
that's
enough.
It. Okay. Sorry, there we go.
OK, next.
Well, have we got time? When should we do our big Eaton
finale? I'm looking to you.
Yeah.
Because you've got some important stuff to do for the Champions draw, haven't you, Victoria?
Yes, but there's plenty of time for that.
Oh, okay. Really? Oh, fine. Well, in that case,
sneak
we do
in a quickie.
Should we do The Cottage?
I love it when you talk like that.
OK, fine. So... Right, so The Cottage is the new movie by Paul Andrew Williams, who made a real splash last year. He made a film called London to Brighton, which was a very, very grim, but I thought very worthy British thriller. And at its centre were these very abused women, who I thought he treated terrifically. I actually compared it to Pat Barker, her book, Blow Your House Down, which for me is very, very high praise. And it's a movie that cost nothing at all. And I thought it was a very good piece of work. Anyway, it turns out he had this script in the bag for ages and ages beforehand. He couldn't get it made. He made London to Brighton. Now, as a result of the success of London to Brighton, he's made the thing he always wanted to make, which is a horror, comedy, thriller, gore movie hybrid, which begins with two people, played by Andy Serkis and Reese Shearsmith, doing a kidnapping, which is going to go terribly wrong because they're terribly bungling. Here's a clip.
OK, time for work. Why don't you just stop whining and sort yourself out?
Why?
Because you are going to have to speak to her.
To who?
To the woman upstairs.
Why?
I told you, she knows me. She comes in the club all the time. That's why it has to be you.
Oh, yes, OK. What do you want me to say?
Well, you have to say a lot of things, but more importantly, you have to say about someone who's going to kill her.
I'm not going to kill her.
I never said you had to, did I? You just have to say about someone who would if they had to.
Well, what do you want me to say, then?
You have to tell her that if you get any more trouble out of her, you're going to break her fingers.
I could say that easily. Why are you making such a big deal out of it?
Because you couldn't scare a child in the dark. You have to say it right.
Okay, let's go.
Just say it to me first.
Why?
Just do it. Come on.
Okay, fine. Any more trouble from you, miss, I'll break your fingers.
Right, say it again, harder.
Any more trouble from you, miss, I'll break your fingers.
And that sort of goes on for quite a long time. And it goes on for about 45 minutes. And then suddenly, in the middle of the film, the kidnapping goes terribly wrong. And they run out and they end up in a farmhouse. And it turns into a sort of pastiche of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre with a character who's kind of like Leatherface. And then it all becomes very gory and very groovy and very knockabout fun. Now, here's the problem. Horror comedy is very, very hard to do. If you look at the classic examples, you look at The Evil Dead, American Werewolf in London. I mean, recently, I think Shaun of the Dead. Those are films which are genuinely scary. I mean, even Shaun of the Dead, which is very funny, has its genuinely worrying moments and genuinely funny. The problem with The Cottage is that it is neither genuinely scary nor genuinely funny. The screenwriting isn't good enough. There's an awful lot of Andy Serkis shouting, which looks to me like shouting and swearing because you know that if you just deliver the dialogue flat, it's not going to have the effect that it needs to have. And when it gets into the horror section, it resorts much too often to simply ladling on the gore because it's not really doing the job that it ought to. And this is a great disappointment for me because I think that he's a very, very talented writer-director on the strength of London and Brighton. I'm willing to believe that he will do other great work. I wanted to like this because I love Andy Serkis. I liked his first film. Part of it shot in the Isle of Man. You know,
he said when we recorded the interview with him last week, Andy Serkis, he said, tell Mark he's not a nice person for not liking this
film. I know, but Andy Serkis, he came up to me at the BAFTAs and he said, why don't you like The Cottage? And I said, because it didn't scare me and it didn't make me laugh. And I said, here's what I'll do. I'll go and see it again. I'll go and see it again and see whether maybe I was in a grumpy mood because all the elements are there for it to be so much better than I thought it was. But I was very, very disappointed by it. And, you know, and partly that's because I went in with such high expectations, but partly it's because it's often the case that when filmmakers get to make the film they really want to make, they don't make their best work. Filmmakers often make their best work making the things they have to make.
I know we should know why you're called the good doctor, but some of us don't. So
Okay, fine. Because I did a PhD, so I am really legitimately Dr. Kermode. I admittedly did my PhD in modern English and American horror fiction, which some people would think would be a Mickey Mouse subject, but I did 4 years of it and I handed it in and I got a thesis, and if you go to Manchester University you can read it.
I, on the other hand, got one for nothing.
He got given his for being Simon Mayo. They just rang him up and went, do you want a doctorate? And he went, yeah, why not? So here,
I'm a doctor of letters, the bad doctor. Yeah, I got to wear the gown and everything.
Yeah, you know, there's more to a doctorate than wearing the gown.
Oh,
did
really?
You know that?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
There's wearing the hat as well.
It's easier just to be given one than to work for 4 years.
Yeah.
Get one. Now, the reason Mark and I are here is because of Cheltenham, but also because of Sport Relief. Mark and I did a whole lot of movie stuff out at Eton. We explained all this about half an hour ago, yep. But it was because we were reenacting the scene from Chariots of Fire where Nigel Hayes and Ben Cross run around and try and break the record. Yeah. All the stuff that we filmed is now online, bbc.co.uk. You can actually watch Mark in his suit and sandals like an idiot, and me conventionally dressed in a Sport Relief t-shirt and running shoes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Running shoes.
Mm. And which one of us ran better?
Well, I think people can watch and judge.
He sent me a text the next day which said, still feeling rather stiff.
Yes, absolutely. Well, we did suffer just a little bit. Anyway, here comes one more review for you. This was done on the hoof.
Now, I have a question before we do any more reviews.
Yeah, sure.
Apart from that, we only have four more laps to do.
Yep.
Four more laps. And then we'll have done our 3 miles.
That's fantastic.
What would
yeah.
the communist Mark Kermode of previous years
yes.
made of this present-day Mark Kermode running around Eton College?
He would have assumed that, in fact, I was on an entrist insurgency mission.
That's what it is.
That I was working from the inside to destroy capitalism,
yeah.
you know, from within.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Either that or you just sold out.
Or I just sold out, yeah.
So here we go. We got to a couple more. How many more laps is it? I've lost count.
Three and a half now. That's, you know, it's just ticking by easily.
A couple more reviews while
yes.
we're here.
Okay. Well, shall we do Hannah Montana and Miley Cyrus? Now, obviously, you know who Hannah Montana is.
Girl off the telly?
Yeah, Girl off the telly. I mean, I've never seen the programme, but I knew the name. So, Girl off the telly, I think the way it works is that she's a kind of... There's two personalities. One of them is Hannah Montana, which is the made-up one. The other one is Miley Cyrus, which I think is who she really is. And she appears to be Billy Ray Cyrus's daughter.
What's the name of this film?
It's called Hannah Montana and Miley Cyrus.
I thought that
in
was
3D.
A double bill.
No.
Double bill.
Yeah, me too. I was worried when I went in. But it's a concert film and very much like U2 in 3D. Now we have Hannah Montana. Yeah, no, Hannah Montana and Miley Cyrus in 3D. So she comes on, it's using the same, you know, digital technique where you feel like you're really up on stage with them. And they do a whole lot of 3-minute bubblegum pop songs. And then they have a support band. And the support band appear to be called the Jones Brothers. And at one moment, the Jones Brothers play a cover version of When I've Been to the Year 3000 by...
Oh, Busted.
Busted, exactly, who are my son's, you know, one of his preferred bands.
Yeah, not now.
No, but... Yeah, but here's the thing. Busted have now been broken up long enough. They've passed into the classic rock catalogue. So whereas before, you'd say, OK, I'm going to do an old Chuck Berry song. Now, you can legitimately do an old Busted song, and half the audience who are 9 have never heard it before. So, right, it's completely manufactured. It's candy floss pop. It's totally corporate and being sold to you. There are all these behind-the-stage scenes of her having a costume change and being told by her parents how to perform. And you know what? I preferred it to U2 3D because...
Oh, surprise me.
Because...
As we run round on lap 3...
Because...
Tell me something I wasn't expecting you to say.
The fact of the matter is that even though it's completely produced, bubblegum pop means nothing, vacuous, all the songs are let's go to a party or I just went to a party or I wish I could have a party or I had a boyfriend, now I don't need a boyfriend, let's have a girls' night out, then here come the boy band, they do the Busted thing. But what you don't get is Bonio and his stupid headband making pontificating speeches about world peace and setting fire to little bits of the stage and saying, you know, hey, now's the time for action whilst owning mansions all over the world.
Let's
and being one of the richest...
Let's accelerate. I want to sprint away from this garbage.
You know, you've got a whole other lap after this.
Oh, really? Oh,
yes. So you peaked too early. So... The 3D technique is as before. It's clearly aimed at an audience of, you know, 5 and 6 year olds. The certificate is U, and it says contains no offensive material. Now, the fact is that U2 3D contain plenty of offensive material in the form of your mate going, oh yeah, people, hi, you know, I'm the new Messiah. Here's the Edge doing some guitar stuff. Got another lap to go.
Yeah, but you're boring. Okay, final bit.
Yes.
as we have three quarters of a lap.
Okay, what do you want to know?
How good is Chariot of Fire? A reassessment.
Dun, 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 dun. Well, it's a great movie. I mean, you know, obviously it's become so pastiche nowadays that it's impossible to listen to this Vangelis score. You are sneaking away. That is just so cheap. It's flip-flops versus trainers. It's a film which stands the test of time and demonstrates that David Putnam remains one of our most interesting film producers.
Do we break the record?
So even when sprinting, Victoria, he was breathing through his ears at this point.
That was genuine exhaustion, not overacting.
No, I mean, would that I could act like that. No, we did feel genuinely rotten at the end of it.
And you can watch us feeling rotten. If you go to the website, all the stuff is there, and you can see Mark and all his finery. And I love that bit at the end, again, when you can hear the sandals flip-flopping on the Eton cobbles.
But it was funny that actually the thing that did give you the energy to sprint away was that you were so fed up with me bad-mouthing you two,
you just got really
you
tedious.
You did suddenly get a second wind.
Peter, on this, I'm very commendable. You're both risking cardiac arrest by delivering this week's reviews on the move,
tell
so to speak. I think you could have gone further. Why didn't you both go to Philadelphia, don boxing gloves and jog up the steps of the museum? There must be other great film runs that you could have honoured, not just Chariots.
Did you know that there was a film director called Uwe Boll who decided to answer his critics by asking them to have boxing matches with him? And he fought his critics. He was so fed up with being called the worst director in the world, he got into and he knocked many of them out. I mean, apparently he was a lousy filmmaker, but boy, could he pack a right hook.
Well, I have to tell you, Victoria, he's been antagonising a lot in the acting fraternity, so that when Benedict Cumberbatch came in to talk about his most recent TV thing, he punched Mark because he'd been so rude about Keira Knightley a regular basis. And this is happening quite a lot now. Jason Isaacs, when he came in, he was really mad at Mark for bad-mouthing Atonement and various other things. So this is going to be a regular feature, famous people punching Mark.
But can we just stress
and if you ever want to do
people,
that on a Friday morning so I can witness it, then please feel free.
Well, and if you want to take a free shot, then, you know, obviously
wouldn't
I'm ready.
But, I've got no reason at this point to punch you.
Exactly. No, I was nice, right?
But do it every week. Who knows?
Can I say, if if you're suitably moved by our athletic endeavour, you can go to the Sport Relief pages, go to the Five Live website, and you can follow instructions from there. A film of the week?
Well, I think Redacted, despite the fact that I understand why you didn't get through to the end of it, but because I think it is something. I mean, a week in which so many films are nothing, it is something.
I will watch the end. It just wasn't last night.
No, sure. No, and I'd say the very end is grim as nuts, right, and then something.
Invite some friends round to watch the ending of it.
I might. I don't have many friends, though. That's a different subject. Thank you.
Come on, I'll be your friend.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kermode and Mr. Mayo.
More like Premier League football than anyone else.
This is Five Live.